Welcome. You are listening to Our Burning Questions, a professional learning podcast where we ask brilliant educators everything you've ever wondered about teaching English language learners. I'm your host, Colette Ferrone Goodwin, and I am a resource specialist on the ENL team with the Mid-State Regional Bilingual Education Resource Network in Syracuse, New York. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to another episode of Our Burning Questions. Our burning questions for today are, why is it important to support Ukrainian families, and how can we welcome and include them? Here to talk with me about these questions, to respond to these questions, is my very special guest, Svetlana Stoel. Welcome, Svetlana. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. And I think the start of this segment with the music that many people will be hearing pretty soon within the next couple of months is very uplifting. We all enjoy the segment, but not always. It's a common knowledge that it's a traditional Ukrainian folk song or kalatka. So I think with many families from Ukraine that are in the region, it would be very special to hear the music of their land. So thank you for having me over.
Oh, you're very welcome. And it's exciting to have you here. And we originally, you had done a virtual session, and that's how we kind of got in touch. And so you're sharing this information, you know, via our podcast, which is really great too. So that, you know, we have different points of access for this information. And so we appreciate you joining us today. Mm-hmm. So, Svetlana, could you just please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am a first generation immigrant in the United States. I came from Ukraine, and I came as an adult learner. So my path professionally has been with special education and also bilingual education. But I also, over a number of recent years, transition into supporting students of different identities. So I'm currently working for Monroe One BOCES in the Office of Diversity and Equity Planning. However, I have been a longstanding friend of R. Burns through my bilingual education support for Office of Special Education. So I think what I've noticed that it has always been a desire of mine to figure out ways how to support people that are coming from Ukraine, whether it was Ukrainian translation and interpretation. But I think now more than ever, I'm able to utilize all the skill sets that I acquired by being in the US and really help the people that need the support the most. So thank you for this opportunity to reach out to a broader audience.
Oh, you're very welcome. And it's very timely and very important because, you know, considering current events. Mm-hmm. And we also know that the New York State Department of Education released a memo in May of 2022, May of this year, and talking about, you know, supporting Ukrainian families. So kind of using that as a base, what are school communities experiencing right now?
Mm-hmm. We actually, when the memo first came out in May, we did not have many families arriving. And one of the misnotions that we could disperse for your audience is there is no official refugee status for the country of Ukraine right now. The families and the students that are arriving, they're arriving more than they did over the summer, is really thanks to United for Ukraine program that was offered and released, where you can have sponsors bring you over. So people are really arriving on a tourist visa, United for Ukraine visa, but the refugee status implies that there are supports available for the families. Since Ukraine does not have a refugee status, there are no supports for the families. They're arriving and figuring out their ways. So really, it's important for schools to recognize that everybody had different experiences. And something as simple as school supplies and the readiness of availability of school supplies can go a long way with families. Mm-hmm. Some families bounced around through different European countries, waited at the border in Mexico. So everybody had a pathway of their own. And it is possible that some families came here directly from Ukraine, where others were really in a number of different countries trying to make their way to the United States. So the communities are uniting, and Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse are sites for relocating refugees, or we have Ukrainian communities. So automatically we're getting more people because we already have an established community from years ago.
Okay. Yeah. And all of those experiences that you just mentioned have an emotional impact, right? A social emotional impact on children. So mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a little bit? What are children experiencing as a result of this war?
Absolutely. And I want to clarify that when I share their experiences, my firsthand knowledge is really coming from my family and friends that are currently in Ukraine or have arrived. We have taken a couple of family members to come join us, but I'm by no means speaking on the behalf of all of the Ukrainians that are arriving within our region. There are different pathways and there are different emotionality. People are displaced. So they're not actively relocating because they wanted to leave their country. So it implies a very temporary nature of being here. And what we know from people that left, stayed in Europe, some of the families are making informed decisions to go back because things settled and it's tough for them emotionally to be separated from their families. They might have left elder parents behind, their husbands, brothers, partners are fighting in the war. So we are getting students that came here and did not witness any violence, but they still have family members that are left behind that they're worried about. So the emotional factor could really go from a degree of the magnitude. We have children that witnessed some of the violence and also the bombing of their cities. So it really depends on what part of Ukraine you're arriving. The united trauma is the country was invaded and it's in the active war space right now. So so it's scary for adult to process that, right? When a developed country can be kind of attacked. And I think one of the realizations I want people to know, sometimes I have questions and people say, but Ukraine was Russian anyway. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is, and it's a stereotype that Ukraine was part of Russia. It was not. It was part of the USSR. It was one of the republics. Mm-hmm. And I'm noticing that many of my friends and the citizens of Ukraine are really using language as power. They're reclaiming Ukrainian language and they're fighting with the language if they can't fight any other way. Mm-hmm. So when you think from the oppression, Ukraine was really squashed and Russian language was used to kind of dilute the Ukrainian culture, dilute the Ukrainian language. And we are realizing now all of those political aspects that perhaps we didn't pay attention mm-hmm. years before. So one of the things that I would love for your audience to do is to stop saying that Ukraine was part of Russia. It was not. Ukraine has always been an independent entity with a distinct language, with a distinct culture, deep-rooted traditions, and it had survived oppression for many, many, many centuries. You know, this is not new to Ukraine. Unfortunately, it's just happening right now. So, you know, I'm of the generation where my parents still remember the World War II, and they survived after the World War II. And then we have younger generation that grew up in Ukraine as independent country. Ukraine celebrated 31st anniversary of being independent. So mm-hmm. there's a generation of 30 years that lived not under the old regime, but under the new independent country where the language is spoken, mm-hmm. the school and the state is utilizing actively language and the traditions. Mm-hmm. So we have different generations that are experienced in different factors.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good point that you bring up about the language too, because people that come from Ukraine, you know, when they come to the United States, the school districts, whoever's processing their intake mm-hmm. might make the assumption that they speak Russian and mm-hmm. not even acknowledge the fact that they speak Ukrainian and not even be aware of the underlying implications of mm-hmm. making that assumption. Mm-hmm. So,
or vice versa. We have families that are arriving from Ukraine, but their home language, heritage language, might be Russian. Or I noticed the first thing that the media did changed how they spelled the name of Kiev, Lviv. Mm-hmm. It was a very Russified name. It mm-hmm. was on the maps and presented in the media before. And immediately they recognized and picked up that we need to spell it the Ukrainian way. So I noticed the families are really coming with the paperwork, and maybe they have a nickname that is a Russian nickname. They're very cautious and guarded because of the climate. We as a school need to reassure whether the families speak Russian or Ukrainian that they're safe here. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of hate going around towards the Russian culture, but we do have people that speak both languages that are arriving, and we need to be cognizant, and we need to be very thoughtful about that, right? When we're securing the supports and translations and greeting the families.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I agree. And so I think you've been sharing a little bit about the experiences of Ukrainian population in New York State, but is there anything particularly significant about the population here in New York State?
I think we have people arriving from different parts of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. For example, you have seen that there are a lot of war, violence, and activities in the eastern part of Ukraine, the western part of Ukraine, Lviv area, and the Carpathian Mountains has always been very pro-Ukrainian. Mm-hmm. And so there's a difference in the cultural traditions within Ukraine itself. It's a large country, the size of probably Texas is the closest. Mm-hmm. And then there are also areas like Odessa region and the areas bordering Romania, where the population primarily speaks Russian, and their traditions are not as deeply rooted in Ukrainian culture because they have a mix of different nations in that region. And those areas were not part of Ukraine till the Second World War started. Mm-hmm. So there are really different ethnic groups, even within Ukraine itself. Mm-hmm. So by nationality, there is a united factor as a characteristic that everybody is Ukrainian. Mm-hmm. But within that nationality, you might have groups coming with Armenian roots or Russian roots or Lithuanian, Latvian roots. So it's the leftover USSR part of Ukraine, so to say. Mm-hmm. One factor that I wanted to mention, the way Ukrainians cope with things. We're a very proud nation, mm-hmm. and actions speak louder than words. So sometimes it's not a standoffish. It's really we show by actions versus the words. Mm-hmm. So the chit-chatting nature of we're all friends in the US is not a familiar notion to Ukrainians. You really have to earn your trust. We don't trust people automatically necessarily. So we're very guarded at first. We're very welcoming and very supportive, but there's a cultural difference. We're coming from a different society, so to say, makeup. So I got a question asked a number of times, the mental health support for the children. It's not a customary service that Ukrainian population rushed to when they were in Ukraine. Actually, there was a lot of stigma about a diagnosis of mental health. So I think families that spent some time in Poland, of my friends mentioned that there is a crew of international psychologists waiting along with Red Cross to provide people with supports and the talking aspect of processing the grief. But it's not a typical service per se that lives with it Ukrainians. So they don't rush easily to social workers, mental health workers. So and sometimes if it's not described correctly, it could be offensive and not taken well. So please be very cognizant that in our best intentions, sometimes we present the information that the families don't quite understand culturally, and thus the services are not utilized. Also, the back and forth communication system with the notes, the backpack, the schedule, the whole way the bus system works, that there's a little yellow bus that comes and picks you up. Those are the new aspects. The lunch, the setup for lunch, and thinking through culturally of how to present it to the families, because we're very period rooted. Every subject area has its own period. So when we have like an ELA of never ending 90 minutes of doing something, needs to be spelled out so the children can articulate it to their families. And then they know that, oh, you're working on reading, writing, and spelling all in one block. Because we have words for those subject areas too.
Okay. I was also thinking about, you know, when you talked about the families, do many of the families know English when they come?
It really depends. Families coming from more rural areas, not necessarily have the depth of English, but families coming from developed cities, English is one of the languages that is taught in school. Some students take it from grade one. Some students take it after the fourth grade. School starts in first grade. So children do go to a formal required school a little later. And also the difference in how the one-to-one correspondence of phonemic awareness and the letter sounding. Pretty much in first, second grade, you're mastered your reading because you see the letter, you kind of know what that sounds and the rules don't change much. So English language is a complex process for the students to learn. Mm-hmm. So it depends. Some older students, if they attended the school where the English was one of the foreign languages, they might be more proficient. And it's really... it depends on where the families are coming from. We have highly educated families with different exposures coming, and the families that are working with more agrarian rural areas where the school is not as advanced to your city school standards. So getting to know the families and asking questions and making observations really tell you a lot about the process. But I can tell you that families are very proud and they're very supportive of education of their children. So they want the best and they're all for responsible schooling.
And I also want to point out too that it's important to have interpreters available. If the parents do not speak English, conveying this information and establishing these relationships, it's important to have interpreters there to explain to them what's going on, especially with, you know, with everything else that they have going on in their lives.
And most likely your current families are really staying in the doubled up units where somebody's taking them in or they found an apartment. So sometimes they're going through the process of staying with their immediate sponsor or community, hoping to get the housing on their own. So it's important to recognize that through the process, the families are relying on other people or members Right. And there would be a point in time that it becomes very taxing for the, you know, other family members. Mm-hmm. So the issue is, under the current process, if you are seeking a temporary protection status, it takes months and months and months to get the approval. For example, for our family members, we applied in July. We're still waiting. So what that status gives you is access to employment. So while the families are waiting to go through the process, there are costs, but also there's time where you're not legally allowed to work. Right. So if you came on a visitor visa, you're definitely not allowed to work. And when you think about the supplies, the food and shelter, and figuring out employment are immediate needs for the families. And then there's always an urge to learn language better. Even if you came with some language, you want to really blend in and figure out how the English spoken in the U.S., because sometimes we learn like British English back in other countries, right?
Right, which is very different from American English.
Exactly, exactly. So we know that as an ENL providers, you know, slang use and making sure we don't use a lot of sarcasm jokes, and helping our students to kind of understand the concrete language first.
Yes.
So those are the big factor. Another consideration is there's a vast difference with US being very individualistic society, mm-hmm. where I is at the center, and Ukrainians coming from the community rooted mm-hmm. collectivist society. Mm-hmm. So there are some cultural differences that need to be learned for both sides, right? Mm-hmm. How we advocate for needs. The US is very I focused, mm-hmm. where Ukrainians, even if they have the needs, not necessarily they will share the needs with you, because we need to develop a trust.
Yeah, that makes me think about Zaretta Hammond's culture tree. Are you mm-hmm. familiar with her work?
Yes, yes. We're on the bottom there, deep rooted.
Yes, absolutely, yes. Absolutely. And then, you know, when you think about, you know, children in school, the misunderstandings that could come of that, you know, for example, if a child is asking somebody else for help when they're not supposed to, you know, during a test or something, that could be misconstrued as trying to cheat when really it's just part of their cultural awareness.
Mm-hmm. And just knowing the flow of the day, each school district, it's not that you walk into the classroom and you see the subjects written out, especially for elementary, right? It's a little easier for middle and high school. Right. Figuring out what those blocks of time and what exactly happens learning wise in those blocks of times, so you can go home and explain to your parents. And we're noticing that with our older students. Sometimes our older students mm-hmm. are better carriers of English than their parents. Mm-hmm. So now the role of figuring out where to get your driver's license, mm-hmm. and what's expected and what do we need to bring to school, and the vaccinations and the medical becomes a big, huge mm-hmm. factor. And mm-hmm. the issue is, even if the families wanted to go to the doctor, there's no medical insurance and there is no support for medical care, right? And we know how expensive it is. Right. So schools need to think of how to creatively work with the families to address the need and maybe utilize school physicians if the family has not been connected to the community center or even county services for medical type of vaccinations and records and figuring out what needs to happen for children to come to school, right?
Yeah. Especially after having experienced COVID, you know, there's all of that part of that as well. And this is out there. Yeah. So what kind of job opportunities are available for adults in this area if maybe their English is limited?
I think before the language part, there are like many legalities that the families have to work through. Mm. If they came on a tourist visa, they cannot work because of the status of the visa. Right. If they came through a sponsorship program, United for Ukraine, for example, or by family members, again, you need to apply and request that you are granted through immigration authorities that permission to work. So I think till the families establish that legality, they really don't have access to formal jobs. And then there is an issue of transportation. In Ukraine, you don't necessarily need a car. There is like a public transportation, well-developed bus, subway. You can get around anywhere, right? In, for example, Rochester area, you need a car to get anywhere if you want to have a job. So figuring out who's your designated driver, converting your license, unless you have an international license, is like obstacle and challenge. So I know some of the families that we came in contact, their priority was to stay connected with adult English classes first, because that develops that system of support where they can problem solve with each other, find rides, or focus on obtaining those necessary permits.
Yep. I remember because I taught adult ed, and I worked with a lot of Ukrainian students, and a lot of times they would come together. I even worked with two sisters that attended classes together, and now they've graduated from college. So it's, you know, it can be done. It's a challenge, but it can be done.
Mm-hmm. And we are gaining many very skilled professionals. Mm-hmm. It's just, there isn't an easy pathway to convert your medical studies or your teaching studies or your IT food service industry without legalizing first, and then figuring out what is a certified, non-certified profession. So I've noticed people clustering around ethnic shops, churches, community centers, credit unions to kind of get some of the opportunities about possible help. But it's not easy. That is why there are people that arrived in the U.S. and it's not a cheap journey either. In Europe, there's free bus and free train that was available within Europe for people to move around, even from Poland to Germany and other places, right? Mm-hmm. In the U.S., you have to get a plane ticket. So it's not a cheap journey, right? Even with that, the families gave their best, tried their best, and are returning possibly to Ukraine.
I can't even imagine the challenges that, you know, that they have to overcome just to even stay, much less try to get back again, right?
Right. And the disruption for the students, especially in lieu of COVID, you know, first we had COVID, then we established and reestablished our opportunities. And again, this is a temporary solution, right? People are not voluntarily leaving. They're really hoping, and they were hoping that they were going to go back a lot sooner. However, it's taking longer. And one of the conversations I am having with ENL teachers is, it is our responsibility to figure out access and ways for students to practice their home language as well. Because when they come back, it's going to be very challenging for them if they have not progressed in reading and writing in their native language, right? The access to the resources and the databases where we can offer books in Ukrainian, especially for youngest learners, right? That perhaps didn't have a strong established way to read and write because they're way too young. And now they're immersed in English in the school setting. The majority of the day they're spending with English speaking peers, trying really hard to learn the new language. So we know that the home language is pushed to the side, right? And home is the place where you get to practice it, maybe orally. But there is also the reading and writing component.
Right. And I think it's also important to make sure that the families, you know, make sure that they understand how important maintaining their home language is, and encouraging them to read to their children and, you know, and practice the writing and all of that at home. To keep it, to maintain, right?
Absolutely.
So in terms of supporting Ukrainian families, what are some things that we need to keep in mind?
So it's important to think of your school as a system and making it as accessible as possible from the time the family registered to have availability of language guides and volunteers that can possibly help the families, and also making it easy. You know, when COVID hit and we couldn't figure out the breakfast lunch, it became accessible and available to everybody. Right. So right now, some of our school districts are offering supplies for everybody. We had a number of schools that said, you know what, school supplies are on us. Mm-hmm. We don't want you to worry. You had a rough couple of years. So figuring out, instead of sending the family to pick up the supplies, what can you have on hand that could be through your foundation or through your volunteers or donations readily available? So when the families walk in, here is welcome. We're excited you are here. Here's the backpack with all of the supplies. Mm-hmm. Connecting with the medical professionals, if there are any supports that the families need with immunizations, because it looks like the biggest challenge is getting through the medical requirements for many families that might be waiting because their records are not in line. Developing relationships, checking and showing that, you know, we care. There is still trauma going on. The news in my household, my family members are constantly watching and updating each other on the news. So the families are probably doing the same for your students. Perhaps not the students are directly exposed, but if the adults are worried about their loved ones left behind or what happened to the town or the city where you came from, that's a concern, right? That's a trauma. And also remembering the students that came to us from other countries that experienced recent war and trauma, right? It's kind of the challenging time for them as well, because they remember their hurts as well. So being very in tuned and cognitive about the social emotional needs, the students might not be practicing the way we are practicing in the schools now through check-in and the optimistic closure kind of rituals. Mm-hmm. However, showing the friendly support goes a long way. If there are parent liaisons or social workers supports to tend to adult needs, that kind of almost becomes our responsibility too, right? Because we are the hub for the families to access the different supports for their children.
Right. And I was also going to add to that social emotional piece is, you know, even though they've been through a trauma, on the other side of that, they do come with strengths and assets. And it's really important to build on those and capitalize on those and create that positive environment, right?
Absolutely. And children are like sponges. They're very excited. They're resilient. They love social aspect of the school. They love the social aspect of learning, right? So they're soaking up new country and figuring out things that they appreciate or things that are difficult for them. So what are the opportunities for them to shine, to share, right?
Yeah.
What might it look like? So today, it's a new experience. Some of the families don't know what's going to happen, right?
Right.
They have to be prepared with candy at their house or figuring out how their children will go and experience this new opportunity that many of the children are familiar with on October 31st. And we also have practicing Ukrainians that that does not go with their beliefs, right? So they might choose otherwise. So how to prepare them for conversations that are going to take place tomorrow. Christmas is around the corner for some of the people that are going to experience it on December 25th. For Ukrainians, Christmas is January 7th celebration.
Oh, wow.
So kind of experiencing the different traditions and learning about other traditions around these festive times is exciting because you've never experienced that. But you also want to be proud and preserving of what you came with.
Right. Yeah. So what are some things that maybe schools can do to ensure that they acknowledge all of these cultural aspects?
And I think the schools in our region are really recognizing the heritage celebrations and the learning part of it. Mm-hmm. So connecting with your community constituents and recognizing what's important so everybody has that special recognition or place through the heritage calendar or the community connections or nationally aligned calendar is a great way to elevate and highlight the special individuality of each of the community. Also looking for opportunities through learning and the language learning. Yeah. And having a community that is safe and comfortable within the immediate classroom community. So we know who speaks what language and who celebrates what within our immediate classroom unit. Mm-hmm. So stemming it to really that individual student to student way. We create friendships, right? So students are disconnected socially from their friends and they might have left their friends behind. So what are the new opportunities that we can foster? I'm finding that traditionally our families of a different cultural background, they kind of stick together and not necessarily they're connected with American families, right? So thinking of how it might look like in the classroom setting. So you do develop friendships and when everybody goes to a birthday party, you're not left behind and you're part of that. The things that every single kid wants, right?
Right.
And that we want for our kids. So Ukrainian families are very proud and they want their children to be safe and happy. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes the same for any family.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Yeah. And going back again to Zaretta Hammond and talking about cultural archetypes, that's one of the things that you just mentioned, right? We all share those things in common, and there may be different aspects of it. And not one is, you know, more important or more significant than the other. They're just different. So
exactly.
Yeah.
And there are some customary things that goes between the parent and the teacher. And, you know, the teacher is the person of authority mm-hmm. and there's a lot of respect that the families have toward the teacher. So recognizing that our friendliness and for Ukrainians, referring to you, Mr. and Mrs. with a very formal way mm-hmm. is a sign to show respect and that the families would not reach out and challenge because it might be considered rude. Mm-hmm. So what can we do instead? Reaching out and initiating the contact and then not having the judgment if we don't get the information back because we don't know what we don't know. Some families might not have enough English mm-hmm. or some families take the information and recognize that they were validated, but they have nothing to offer at this point. Mm-hmm. Just continue reaching out and offering your help, support, and reassuring that the children are learning and they're safe is something that every single family appreciates.
Absolutely. You always like to hear, you know, hear the good things about what your kids are doing and what they're learning. And that just kind of, I think, reinforces that.
Definitely. And remembering not to put, especially as we get older and current events and social studies units are part of the history books and not to put the students on the spot or make them a token to represent, right? And ask questions. So again, we don't know what the responses we get, but watch and listen for those initiated sharings. I'm connected with some of the students in the area. And occasionally, if I stop by and visit, they're very sharing. They're very excited about their friendships and the new things that they're learning. And they're constantly comparing, contrasting how things were at their school versus how things are here. Mm-hmm. And our youngest students, first, second grade, this could be the first formal experience of the school setting for them in general, right? If they were in online format, this is the first time as a second or third grader, they might be figuring out what the formal structure of the school is. So the more successful and positive experiences they are, the best it is for long-term, right? For everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also in terms of, you know, those social studies classes for, you know, for older students, there's also a different perspective, right? It's not always the same as what's written in the history book. Uh-huh. It's a different perspective. And so it's important to keep that in mind as well.
Absolutely. So I think if I am an ENL teacher of the school district, and I know that the family is arriving, it's important to pay attention what region of Ukraine the family is arriving from, because you can easily jump and through the internet search, identify what happened in the area, recognizing what is the home language. We know that the country language is Ukrainian, but to kind of even dig deeper, that Ukrainian is a state language and all of the paperwork is in Ukrainian. And what language does the family speak in home? And sometimes the families are very cautious to share that, right? And then in time, with safety and trust developed, the families will share more of what they left behind and who is behind, to validate that. Sometimes, like 2 weeks ago, it was like a really increased violence week for the whole week. We reverted to daily aggressions. So it was a tough time for many families because they were observing which areas are being randomly bombed, right? So be cognizant that sometimes things settle and then sometimes they're escalated violence again. Might explain why students are acting out or why they're sad more than they were originally showing.
Yeah. I was just noticing your use of we. Even though you're here, you're still connecting with, you know, with everyone. And I think that's just important to point out, you know, that connection doesn't stop when you're, you know, when you're here. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we grew up and we are continuing part of more of collectivist society than individualist society. So sometimes we make observations of how Americans present, very friendly, but at times very surfaced, versus Ukrainians come across as a less smiley, more stoic, but develop a much deeper level of, if I have a relationship with you and you cross the line of being my friend, you know, we don't use the word friends lightly.
So you're kind of stuck with them then.
Yes, yes.
I'm kind of the same way. So looking forward, how can we apply that optimistic closure? What can we do moving forward?
Well, I think as a humanity, we are really showing Ukraine our united effort, that they're not alone. And I think seeing the flags and the symbols, and you drive through the towns and the communities and you see so many blue and yellow flags. By the way, blue represents the sky and yellow represents the wheat, the grain of Ukraine. It definitely helps you connect and understand that this world figured it out, that this is a wrong thing that's taking place right now. Right. So kind of continuously lifting the spirits and showing helps the families to keep going. It's not an easy life away from everything that you worked so hard for, right? You didn't ask to be chased all throughout the world. I think there were some statistics between 10 to 14 million people are displaced by war. That's a huge, huge number of people. So, and they're very appreciative. They're very grateful. This is a new home for now. And we are trying to be very respectful consumers, and we want to be partners in the education process for our children. We don't quite have all of the skills we need, right? Because of the new language, because of the barriers we have encountered. And just remembering that these are tough times for this group of people right now. So for humankind, we are in it together, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I just want to say, you know, I hope that all of your family and friends that are still there are safe and you know, are healthy. And you know, we certainly keeping everyone in there in our thoughts, and pray for the best.
Thank you. And thank you for an opportunity to kind of highlight things that matter to people from Ukraine. By the way, one of the things that I noticed people are still using, they're saying the Ukraine, which is the connection to Ukraine as a republic. So once Ukraine became an independent country, the part dropped. So it's not the country of Ukraine. It's simply Ukraine.
That's good to know. I wondered about that myself.
Yeah,
I
just one of those stereotypes, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely similarity. Cyrillic alphabet is used in both Russian and Ukrainian languages, but they're very distinct languages. Mm-hmm. So when I left 27 years ago,
right.
The language progressed. So there are new words that were invented, mm-hmm. and their Russified words were replaced by Ukrainian words. So sometimes when I watch the news or catching up on correspondence, mm-hmm. there are many new words that I'm recognizing are part of the Ukrainian language that were not perhaps part of my language. So mm-hmm. if you're not exposed and you don't know Ukrainian language, mm-hmm. it's a separate language.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The words sound different.
Yeah. It's the same alphabet, but different language. That's
and even within the alphabet, there is a difference. There's like the I and I with two dots that mm-hmm. are not existing in the, your Russian language. So,
okay.
So it's a distinct symbolic representation of the language. Mm-hmm. There are words that might sound the same, like cognates are the same, but there are also many words that don't exist in a language and are very unique to Ukrainian language.
That's interesting. Could you give me an example of maybe one of those words?
For example, red is krasny mm-hmm. in Russian.
Yeah.
Червоний is in Ukrainian.
Ah, okay. All right. Very different.
Very different. So they're distinct colors and yes.
Wow. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today. I think I've learned a lot in just, this short conversation. I know that when you presented this in your presentation, you shared a couple of links of some resources. So I'm also going to make sure that we make those available along with the recording. There was an article in Coloring Colorado, partnering uh-huh. with Ukrainian families, tips for schools, and the invasion of Ukraine, resources for educators and families. And those are both on the Coloring Colorado website.
Thank you.
The Uniting for Ukraine website as well. So,
thank you.
Yes. So thank you so much. And I hope to talk with you again and learn some more.
Well, and thank you for taking your time, taking the opportunity. And if you get questions from your listeners, feel free to send them my way. I'm more than happy to share my contact information. And if there's anything I can do to help, we're in it together.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And I can even include that information on our website with the recording as well, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right.
До побачення.
What does that mean?
It says goodbye.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you for listening today. If you would like to learn more about the brilliant guest we had on today's episode or any of the resources we discussed, please visit the Mid-State Arburn webpage. This podcast is produced by Mid-State Arburn at OCM BOCES, and our theme music is Catalyst from Purple Planet Music. We hope that you'll tune in next time for more of our burning questions.